Chapter 7. How it happened it is impossible to say, because it came about step by step, unnoticed, but in the third month of Ivan Ilyich's illness, his wife, his daughter, his son, his acquaintances, the doctors, the servants, and above all he himself, were aware that the whole interest he had for other people was whether he would soon vacate his place, and at last release the living from the discomfort caused by his presence, and be himself released from his sufferings. He slept less and less. He was given opium and hypodermic injections of morphine, but this did not relieve him. The dull depression he experienced in a somnolent condition at first gave him a little relief, but only as something new. Afterwards it became as distressing as the pain itself, or even more so. Special foods were prepared for him by the doctor's orders, but all those foods became increasingly distasteful and disgusting to him. For his excretions also special arrangements had to be made, and this was a torment to him every time, a torment from the uncleanliness, the unseemliness, and the smell, and from knowing that another person had to take part in it. But just through his most unpleasant manner, Ivan Ilyich obtained comfort. Gerasim, the butler's young assistant, always came in to carry the things out. Gerasim was a clean, fresh peasant lad, grown stout on town food and always cheerful and bright. At first the sight of him, in his clean Russian peasant costume, engaged on that disgusting task embarrassed Ivan Ilyich. Once when he got up from the commode to eat to draw up his trousers, he dropped into a soft armchair and looked with horror at his bare, enfeebled thighs with the muscles so sharply marked on them. Gerasim with a firm light tread, his heavy boots emitting a pleasant smell of tar and fresh winter air, came in wearing a clean Hessian apron, the sleeves of his print shirt tucked up over his strong bare young arms, and refraining from looking at his sick master out of consideration for his feelings, and restraining the joy of life that beamed from his face, he went up to the commode. "Gerasim," said Ivan Ilyich in a weak voice. Gerasim started, evidently afraid he might have committed some blunder, and with a rapid movement turned his fresh, kind, simple young face which just showed the first downy signs of a beard. "Yes, sir. It must be very unpleasant for you. You must forgive me. I'm helpless." "Oh, why, sir," and Gerasim's eyes beamed and he showed his glistening white teeth, "what's a little trouble? It's a case of illness with you, sir." And his deft strong hands did their accustomed task, and he went out of the room stabbing lightly. 5 minutes later he as lightly returned. Ivan Ilyich was still sitting in the same position in the armchair. "Gerasim," he said when the latter had replaced the freshly washed utensil, "please come here and help me." Gerasim went up to him. "Lift me up. It is hard for me to get up, and I have sent Dmitri away." Gerasim went up to him, grasped his master with his strong arms deftly but gently, in the same way that he stepped, lifted him, supported him with one hand, and with the other drew up his trousers, and would have set him down again, but Ivan Ilyich asked to be led to the sofa. Gerasim, without an effort and without apparent pressure, led him, almost lifting him, to the sofa and placed him on it. "That you. How easily and well you do it all." Gerasim smiled again and turned to leave the room. But Ivan Ilyich felt his presence such a comfort, that he did not want to let him go. "One thing more, please move up that chair." "No, the other one, under my feet. It is easier for me when my feet are raised." Gerasim brought the chair, set it down gently in place, and raised Ivan Ilyich's legs on it. It seemed to Ivan Ilyich that he felt better while Gerasim was holding up his legs. "It's better when my legs are higher," he said. "Place that cushion under them." Gerasim did so. He again lifted the legs and placed them, and again Ivan Ilyich felt better while Gerasim held his legs. When he set them down Ivan Ilyich fancied he felt worse. "Gerasim," he said. "Are you busy now?"
"Not at all, sir," said Gerasim, who had learned from the townsfolk how to speak to gentlefolk.
"What have you still to do?"
"What have I to do? I've done everything except chopping the logs for tomorrow."
"Then hold my legs up a bit higher, can you?"
"Of course I can."
"Why not?"
And Gerasim raised his master's legs higher, and Ivan Ilyich thought that in that position he did not feel any pain at all. And how about the logs? Don't trouble about that, sir. There's plenty of time. Ivan Ilyich told Gerasim to sit down and hold his legs, and began to talk to him. And strange to say, it seemed to him that he felt better while Gerasim held his legs up. After that, Ivan Ilyich would sometimes call Gerasim and get him to hold his legs on his shoulders, and he liked talking to him. Gerasim did it all easily, willingly, simply, and with a good nature that touched Ivan Ilyich. Health, strength, and vitality in other people were offensive to him, but Gerasim's strength and vitality did not mortify but soothed him. What tormented Ivan Ilyich most was the deception, the lie, which for some reason they all accepted, that he was not dying but was simply ill, and he only need keep quiet, and undergo a treatment and then something very good would result. He however knew that do what they would, nothing would come of it, only still more agonizing suffering and death. This deception tortured him, they're not wishing to admit what they all knew and what he knew, but wanting to lie to him concerning his terrible condition, and wishing and forcing him to participate in that lie. Those lies, lies enacted over him on the eve of his death and destined to degrade this awful, solemn act to the level of their visitings, their curtains, their sturgeon for dinner, were a terrible agony for Ivan Ilyich. And strangely enough, many times when they were going through their ethics over him, he had been within a hairbreadth of calling out to them, "Stop lying. You know and I know that I am dying. Then at least stop lying about it." But he had never had the spirit to do it. The awful, terrible act of his dying was, he could see, reduced by those about him to the level of a casual, unpleasant, and almost indecorous incident, as if someone entered a drawing room diffusing an unpleasant odour, and this was done by that very decorum which he had served all his life long. He saw that no one felt for him, because no one even wished to grasp his position. Only Gerasim recognized it and pitied him. And so Ivan Ilyich felt at ease only with him. He felt comforted when Gerasim supported his legs sometimes all night long, and refused to go to bed, saying, "Don't you worry, Ivan Ilyich. I'll get sleep enough later on," or when he suddenly became familiar and exclaimed, "If you weren't sick it would be another matter, but as it is, why should I grudge a little trouble?" Gerasim alone did not lie. Everything showed that he alone understood the facts of the case, and did not consider it necessary to disguise them, but simply felt sorry for his emaciated and enfeebled master. Once when Ivan Ilyich was sending him away, he even said straight out, "We shall all of us die, so why should I grudge a little trouble?" Expressing the fact that he did not think his work burdensome, because he was doing it for a dying man, and hoped someone would do the same for him when his time came. Apart from this lying, or because of it, what most tormented Ivan Ilyich was that no one pitied him as he wished to be pitied. At certain moments after prolonged suffering he wished most of all, though he would have been ashamed to confess it, for someone to pity him as a sick child is pitied. He longed to be petted and comforted. He knew he was an important functionary, that he had a beard turning gray, and that therefore what he longed for was impossible, but still he longed for it. And in Gerasim's attitude towards him there was something akin to what he wished for, and so that attitude comforted him. Ivan Ilyich wanted to weep, wanted to be petted and cried over, and then his colleague Shebek would come, and instead of weeping and being petted, Ivan Ilyich would assume a serious, severe, and profound air, and by force of habit would express his opinion on a decision of the Court of Cassation and would stubbornly insist on that view. This falsity around him and within him did more than anything else to poison his last days.